This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Other than our former police chief, what does Detroit have that we don't have? A group of Cincinnati leaders traveled to Detroit to get ideas from the city determined to pull itself up and out of bankruptcy. Sean Riney is director of the Eigel Center for Community Engaged Learning at Xavier University. He was part of the expedition and he wrote about it for Soapbox Cincinnati. Sean and Eric Avner, Vice President and Senior Program Manager of Community Development with the Carol Ann and Ralph V. Hale Jr. U.S. Bank Foundation, who organized the trip. Both of them are here to talk about what we can learn from Detroit. And, you know, Sean, I had to admit, when I saw the title, What Can Cincinnati Learn from Detroit, I did a double take. I said, really? But I guess there are things good and bad, positives and negatives that we can take from learning from what's happened in Detroit.
Well, and I think that was the piece that Eric sort of set the template with for us, is there are learning opportunities everywhere. And we did learn the good and the bad, primarily the good, though. And I think that was the interesting piece, because Cincinnati and Detroit are very different cities, very different in many ways. We're not facing bankruptcy, or at least the prospect of bankruptcy. But we're old cities, old urban Rust Belt cities, strong art cities. And there were a lot of comparisons, both from the new business piece, the education piece, the arts and culture piece, that were great learning lessons for all of us who made the trip.
Erica, the trip to Detroit was preceded, if I'm correct, it was preceded by a group of Detroit leaders coming down to Cincinnati and taking a look around here.
Yes.
Is that correct? And what were they able to take away from their visit here?
You know, they were really interested in particularly our focus on urban development. There's a lot of similarities that I didn't even realize between Detroit and Cincinnati. And I think what they were looking for, we spent a whole day with them just on foot and over the Rhine. They were very fascinated with how that was coming together. They were looking at Uptown and how the anchor institutions in that neighborhood are working together. They were really looking at our waterfront. There was just a lot of similarities. And I think what we came away with was there was this – a lot of people take a group of folks to a different city, but then how often can you kind of swap that talent so that – well, they came down and visited us, we decided we're going to return the favor and go back up there and see what we could learn from them.
No, mutual thing between
yes.
the two cities. When you made the trip to Detroit, were you focused on certain parts of Detroit?
You know, I think we were. When Sean mentioned that we were trying to set the stage before we left, I mean, we were trying to say, hey, look, we're going to go – we're talking about an industrial city along I-75. It's on a river where people on the other side of the river feel like they're in different countries. You have a downtown that's anchored by a public space that's privately funded. You have an area near downtown that has a major public university and hospitals. And you have a city that's struggling with how to connect those with a rail system. And trying to figure out, wow, there's actually – we're not going to go out and spend a bunch of time looking at all the – square miles and square miles of blight, but there is a focus area that we can look at where there's a concentration of investment, concentration of talent, and concentration of ideas.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call is 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sean, what kinds of things did you see that Detroit is doing to try to rejuvenate itself?
Well, it starts – I mean, for them, it starts with development, and there's obviously the bricks and mortar piece for any city, but it's the investment in people that I think is the most exciting part. One of the pieces that didn't make the story was DHIVE, which is sort of the welcome center for Detroiters, new Detroiters, young talent, young investment who are looking for an opportunity to start a business, to find a place to live. And it was a welcome mat. It was a point where you could come and figure out where the next steps were for you, and it's way better than a tourism piece for them. It's very much they wanted to invest you in the city. They wanted to see a new business there, and they were interested in your business. And that was very clear.
So would you say Detroit's an example of the old saying that every cloud has a silver lining?
Multiple ones, but I think it's – you know, they're not – these folks aren't living in a daydream. They recognize what they've gone through, both industrial – from the industrial standpoint, the economic standpoint, what it's done to their psyche, you know, when you a city goes through what Detroit goes through. But it's the – they're unafraid to reinvent. They're unafraid to reinvest. They've got a lot of bold leadership, which I think is the piece we all talked quite a bit about, was their investment in leadership and some of the private sector folks who are stepping forward and saying, this is my city. This is my vision for my city and moving forward in that way.
Are there certain advantages that Cincinnati has that maybe Detroit doesn't have in terms of the way we organize our development in the city?
I think Cincinnati has a lot of advantages that Detroit doesn't have. And I think that was part of the reason Detroit came down, because they wanted to see how we're leveraging those advantages. The thing was interesting about Detroit, to me anyway, is that there's a construct that's really been developed around the 7.2 initiative, which is they've acknowledged that there's about a 7.2 square mile corridor or anchor area of Detroit that basically goes from the river all the way up through Midtown and New Center that is as competitive as anywhere in the country on talent, on jobs, on occupational residential occupancy, on job growth, on investment. I mean, it's an amazing core of that city. The flip side is there's 139 square miles of Detroit. So there is 7.2 of it that works really, really well and is really competitive. That's where we spent a lot of our time looking at that, figuring out how is that being so competitive. And it gave us a lot of ideas.
Again, if you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call is 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. And Sean, there was a really interesting parallel that you pointed out in your article, and that was the one that Cincinnati's trying to develop Wasson Way, a bike and hike trail that develops around a railroad line. And Detroit has a similar development going on, doesn't it?
They do. The DeQuinter Cut is their version of it, although, again, dramatically different. And I think, to Eric's point, we actually have an advantage over Detroit in the sense that the Wasson Way, as it's sort of been conceived, is 6.5 miles. And right now they're at 1¾ and hoping to grow. And ours also connects to 68 miles of biking trails that, go all the way – it goes far north as Dayton. They don't have that advantage either. But what they've recognized is what a powerful piece that is to have in the urban core, to have this hiking, biking trail. It's a business attractive piece. It's an individual lifestyle choice attractive piece as well.
And what role is food playing in Detroit? And it also plays a big role here in Cincinnati as far as revitalizing the urban area. What role do we see food playing for both cities?
I'm looking at Eric, who's the food expert.
Is Eric our food expert?
No, I don't know. But I think we did take a good look and spent a fair bit of time at Eastern Market in Detroit. And we had Joe Hansbauer with us, who's the CEO of Findlay Market. He came along on the trip. And I think we really wanted to look at how Eastern Market has been successful in leveraging food entrepreneurs, how to expand the role of the market. The market's only open, I think it's one day a week for the public. So, again, we have an advantage with Findlay Market, but Eastern Market has a big wholesale issue. They have they've created temporary or pop-up markets in neighborhoods that use the Eastern Market brand. So there was a lot to learn in the food world, both with entrepreneurs as well as some community assets that they're leveraging. But it was really interesting to hear how they perceive that.
And let's talk with – is this correct, Pete? Why from Hyde Park? Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Well, how are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Great. I'm under the impression, I think, that Detroit has been working to turn a lot of their blighted area over to farmland. And I'm wondering if there's been any consideration for Cincinnati, for downtown Cincinnati, and whether it's, given right back to the local public or people who are in need.
I mean, I can speak to that a little bit. We did hear from the Eastern Market people about the – I think there were well over 1,000 urban farms in Detroit. I think a lot of that goes back to the fact that, again, it's a city that's 139 square miles and the population is half of what it was. So there's a lot of vacant land and there are very limited sources of – or very limited ideas of what you can do with it. They've realized that one strategy for using that land in Detroit is as urban farming. I think Cincinnati has some options in various places where that could work, but nowhere near the scale of what they're talking about in Detroit. It just has to do with the amount of land.
But has there been any consideration to things beyond communal gardening? Because I know there are a couple of very tiny communal gardens in the Over the Rhine area, but we could certainly expand.
Well, and I know that Findlay Market has made no secret that they're always looking to expand their urban farm. That's at Liberty and Elm. It's a tremendous space, but it's limited only by, as Eric pointed out, that we've got a fairly dense urban environment, which isn't something Detroit has the luxury of right now. They have open fields, where buildings have been raised. So I think the potential's there. I think finding a decent enough space is always the question for those who are promoting urban farming.
Why? Thank you very much. Good questions.
Thanks.
And based on what you saw in Detroit and what's going on here in Cincinnati, how important is it for the public and the private sector to work together on these kinds of things?
Well, so a couple of interesting examples. One of the reasons, again, we went to Detroit too was there was this balance between really large initiatives and very small initiatives. And I think both of the cities have a kind of a corporate culture in the way that traditionally we've done things at big scale. I mean, we have when you think of like the banks being developed, or you have just the way that the 3CDC was organized around Over the Rhine development. Detroit has similar major initiatives. Dan Gilbert's organization, Detroit, buying up essentially half of downtown, the riverfront, massive investments. But the Detroit narrative right now is about tiny projects. The one person starting a little barbecue place, the one person starting a little urban farm, one person building or starting a clothing line. And I think the way that the public sector and the private sector work and put the prioritization on where they can put their resources most effectively is different in Cincinnati and Detroit. I think we can probably help small initiatives a little bit more in Cincinnati. And I think that was some of what we were looking for in our lesson in Detroit.
And we had a call from Bob who wanted to know if there was any review or discussion about the social or racial divides in Detroit compared to, say, Cincinnati.
We had a little bit of a conversation. I think it's undeniable in both cities. I mean, there is an issue of segregation. I think in Detroit, it's so striking because the city is, I think, directionally, I'm correct. It's in the sort of the 90% African American, and the suburbs are about 90% Caucasian. So it's a very segregated city to region. Here we have it's parts of the city are segregated. I mean, the city itself becomes segregated. So I think we did understand that both cities are doing – could do better in issues of that. We could be doing better in educational attainment. We could be doing better in some neighborhood development issues. So we had a lot to share on the positive side, but we had a lot to share also realizing that we all have problems we're working with.
Well, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Sean Riney is director of the Eigel Center for Community Engaged Learning at Xavier University, and Eric Avner, vice president and senior program manager of community development with the Carol Ann and Ralph B. Hale Jr. U.S. Bank Foundation.